This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 20th of July, 2021. And pretty broad risk-off move across markets yesterday. We'll see, and with perfect hindsight, of course, in coming days, whether this was the capitulation for this move. Coming up on some key levels where we think it's looking at whether the status shifts from a sharp consolidation to something that threatens a proper so-called correction, a correction being, in strict definition terms, on the order of 10%. In the market. I would argue a correction could be as little as 5%, but let's look at where we are technically. And on slide two, the S&P 500, we pull out that 4225 level. It's a level I mentioned yesterday. It's exactly where we found support yesterday, the 61.8% retracement of that latest rally wave. And not coincidentally, the 55-day moving average, that's the moving average you can see at coinciding with yesterday's lows. You can see how well, that has been, or how good that indicator has been for finding support. The two times it broke previously, it was immediately rejected the following day. So at key levels here, you can see on the right where the most concentrated selling was taking place. Interestingly, look at the bubble stocks, the one day is 0%. I think that's kind of interesting that they're not leading this decline. Some of that could be, of course, on the whole argument around interest rates, that value should be doing worse. And growth and momentum should, getting some solace from those further drops in yields. On the other hand, another speculative space like crypto had a very ugly day yesterday at the very bottom of the rankings there, down 5%, and suggesting that crypto is to some degree correlated with risk on and risk off. And in fact, you really need to watch Bitcoin today as something that could feed back into other markets. It's trading below 30,000, really a key level. It has been below there before, but it has not closed below there since the very, very beginning of this year. And then, of course, the usual patterns across markets, dollar firmer, treasuries having a very good run of it higher. You can see that on slide three. That's the 10-year future on the left, which is where we're seeing the yields punching down to the lows for the cycle here. 1.2% was around where we closed yesterday. And look at the yield curve on the right, of course, with the front end of the yield curve fairly well anchored. Yes, it's moving a little bit. We're seeing the yield curve flatten quite aggressively down below 100 basis points. Now we have on the call today, I have here Eleanor Craig, our strategist out in Australia. We haven't had you on for quite some time, Eleanor, but one of the things I've mentioned quite prominently recently is Australia. When you look at something like the two-year yields for those G10 currencies where we actually have a semi-positive yield, so this chart on slide four showing that two-year yield, the swap yield relative to the other more positive yielding G10 currencies. And interesting to see, this has not been the case in previous cycles. Australia at the bottom of the class, very dovish central bank, even relative to other central banks. What is your take on how appropriate the RBA's policy stance is here and to what degree they could be having to sort of maybe make an embarrassing retrenchment on that yield curve control policy down the road here?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's very interesting at the moment. We obviously saw the minutes from the RBA today. Not really, I guess, much kind of new news, given we've seen Governor Lowe kind of speaking twice already since the meeting. But certainly, I think what did stand out was really the discussion around this kind of move to flexible QE and the decision not to roll the yield curve control target to the November 2024 bond was, seemingly quite prudent, quite restrained, and certainly did attempt to, push back on market pricing, which was really pushing for kind of a pre-24 liftoff in rates. And, I think certainly in light of the current circumstances, that kind of, at the margin cautious approach certainly seems like the kind of right steps to take. I think we're kind of looking at a situation now where we've seen lockdowns extended, we've seen lockdowns implemented in Victoria, we've seen the lockdown extended in New South Wales and the restrictions tightened to include a pause on construction work. We're going to have a consistent revisions down, I think, in 3Q GDP, particularly with those restrictions tightening. And, you know, I think the RBA might be looking at kind of an about turn, certainly on their taper stance and delaying that. I think, you know, at the moment, with respect to the yield curve control target and the roll to that November 24 bond, I think they just want to maintain that flexibility in terms of if upside scenarios can be incurred. You know, as we've seen prior to this current outbreak, the Australian recovery was really kind of full steam ahead, I guess. The labour market tightening significantly with international borders closed and less migrant labour. But, you know, I think it's going to be a big question around this vaccine rollout. We're still sitting at only around 11% fully vaccinated, last in the OECD rankings.
Oh, good. Good job now. Good job there.
Yeah, well and truly bungled, not just on kind of the logistics and the supply, but also I think the narrative from the government in terms of the messaging, with them recommending that only those over age 60 get the AstraZeneca shot due to the risk of blood clotting, and then backflipping on that. But, you know, I think the damage has in many ways been done, and we're seeing this kind of hesitancy creeping into the picture, particularly in areas, I think, where the virus has never really taken hold. There's a real sense of complacency. But, you know, it's crazy, right? The borders can't stay shut forever. Right. But yeah, I mean, at this stage, I think this vaccine rollout is so bungled. It's kind of anyone's guess, because it seems like, you know, this Delta variant has well and truly set in at the moment.
Yeah. And then I've made the statement, it's hard to imagine that the Australian rate outlook can diverge much more than it has from New Zealand, where they've really taken a hawkish turn there, faced with similar vaccine situation. But either we get a less inflationary outcome than expected and a retrenchment, which would see the Kiwi outlook kind of collapsing back in line with the other major central banks, or the RBA has been too cautious and they have to backtrack on their yield curve intentions, even to that April 2024 bond. Just on a different note, and actually, let me just round that out with the look at Aussie dollar. Really key, technically, what's going on here, because levels I've mentioned before, you can see it on slide 5, I put up a weekly chart there. You have that head and shoulders like formation. It's a little bit awkward because it's a downward sloping one, but that level effectively giving way last week. And as well, we're seeing a follow through below that flat line area around 74 plus, which was a major high back in late last year. And it's really pointing towards a full breakdown, potentially towards that huge 70 level. So I you know, put a dotted flat line in there at the 70 level. You can see it was a major top back pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, and then it was a support in the run into the rally into the beginning of this year. I've noticed, Eleanor, the Australian stock market seems to be treading water, a little bit less affected by this latest sell-off than elsewhere. What are the concerns, you know, linked to China? We've seen some sort of partial, you know, attempts to sort of limit, especially commodity imports from Australia. There's been coking coal, and there's been barley and other products involved in that. Is that sort of cooled down, or are there some significant forward fears on that account?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think when it comes to kind of the Australia-China tensions, it's certainly something that is lingering in the background. And I think across, you know, those assets that are most impacted, there is kind of, an embedded geopolitical risk premium there. But I think it's broadly something that kind of, as with, I guess, various other kind of geopolitical events, people tend to ignore until we reach those kind of more significant flashpoints. And I guess just construct their portfolios to kind of allocate away from those kind of companies that would be the most impacted by those geopolitical tensions. But I mean, you know, certainly today seeing the ASX kind of closing off of best levels, but also well off of the lows of the day, you know, and I think heading into earnings season here, in August, kind of heading into earnings season, I guess a little bit on the back foot at the moment. But, you know, I think We've got a potential really that those upcoming company reports can potentially become a bit of a positive catalyst, given that we've obviously seen that, you know, in the period to be reported, renormalization is going to have continued to reflate profits, and certainly with the banks and the miners really set to return capital to shareholders here in Australia. But, you know, I think as well, investors are going to be really watching those forward outlooks and the guidance coming from management, given that obviously the current situation is going to be playing on many's minds.
All right, Eleanor, I'm glad you could join us. Unfortunately, your swan song on the market call is you found some greener pastures, apparently, on the other side of the fence somewhere down there in Australia, and will be leaving us soon. So, Eleanor from Australia, interesting to see how that shapes up.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Eleanor. And as you mentioned, as Eleanor mentioned, that we're coming off the lows of the session. And part of that was linked to, and part of the nervousness overnight linked to this Evergrande story. So this large Chinese property developer, the largest one, with something like $300 billion of property developments, seeing further pressure overnight, a 28% drop in its equity, in fact, at the lows overnight relative to where it closed on Friday. Its bonds also ripping lower to the lows for the cycle. However, not so long ago, we saw a news item that at least one Chinese city was allowing Evergrande to proceed with some of its developments, and that was seeing a very steep rally in that equity price there. So it's one of those likely too big to fail, but how is the situation going to develop? And it is a very big company, and we've seen some effects across, and some contagion effects across credit from those moves overnight. So a nervous situation there, likely behind some of the attempt to get a boost out of or to find a sentiment boost this morning. All right, I'll continue a little bit with the FX story here, because I think there's so much in play interesting on the technical side in FX. And one of those is dollar yen, where yesterday the levels I've mentioned quite prominently came into play. It was almost provided the exact lows of the day, in fact, in dollar yen. That huge spike in U.S. Treasuries and the punch lower in yields supporting the yen across the board, and it was really outpacing the dollar quite sharply at one point yesterday. And you can see on slide six, so that 109.07 area, the 61.8% retracement of the rally from the 107.50 area lows of April, and that Ichimoku cloud level. You can't deny these levels are quite interesting, especially when the cloud is a little bit thinner. This is existential stuff. So if we probably need to rally well back above 110 here and get some relief across risk sentiment, or a reversal in the treasury rally to allay the risk of further downside here. Very key levels, just again, along the lines of what we mentioned at the top of the program with the S&P, and are we sort of finished here with this consolidation, or are we lurching into a correction mode? And then chart of the week and last week and the week prior, it seems like, is this Eurodollar chart, where we're waiting for something to give or not. You can see it on slide seven, that big neckline-like area. ECB up on Thursday. And look at the trend reading. It's getting very strong, and because of the scale of what's been happening, and because it's been an acceleration from quite compressed volatility, which enhances the strength of these signals. So the yen at 6.4 on the trending indicator across the board. Nokia minus 6.1. I want to get contrarian there at some point, but I don't want to be too early. Gold managing to find some support yesterday. As it played a little bit of its safe haven role and tested below 1800, sort of underlying the 1800 area in gold is really critical stuff. And then you see the oil-linked currencies. I mentioned Nokia, Canada really accelerating to the downside. We had a very ugly day for crude oil markets. We highlighted the risks there yesterday. And of course, the link with the demand story on COVID variants, but also this OPEC deal to expand production. And we punched through some key local pivot levels for support. $5, the worst day of the year in nominal dollar terms. I think there was one worse day in percentage terms this year. I think it potentially opens up for the bigger round support levels down lower for crude levels. So look at something like the 200-day moving average on the rolling contract basis for those. In terms of earnings, we had IBM out yesterday with better than expected results on cloud. Managed another year-on-year growth, and that's no mean feat given their long-term battle to get back on a growth track. Part of that, no doubt, that Red Hat acquisition. And then we have the Netflix up today after the close. However, Halliburton will be reporting before the open today. And you can see the highlights on slide 8 for earnings for the rest of this week. A couple of interesting ones tomorrow. ASML, the Dutch lithography, basically equipment maker for semiconductors, an incredible stock. Look at a 10-plus year chart on that one. Daimler as well reporting after that tremendous run into the June highs for German auto stocks. On the macro calendar, fairly quiet day. We had the NAHB, the most, I think, the best leading indicator on the U.S. housing market out yesterday. It's still very, very elevated, but it is declining slowly and declined a little bit more, or declined a little bit again for the June cycle. And today we have housing starts and building permits, another Australian data point up overnight, and a Treasury auction tomorrow. Interesting to see the demand there with this latest collapse in U.S. yields. ECB meeting on Thursday. They're expected to announce something, but I'm not sure it's really something that's going to surprise the market here. And I've talked about that enough. And hopefully we'll have our Christopher Dembick from France out with some preview, helping us preview that ECB meeting tomorrow. All right. I think I'm going to wrap up the call there for today. Again, the what is at stake here is whether this thin summer trading months, the risk that we've been a bit too complacent in terms of putting on too much leverage, as every single sell-off has been quickly gathered up for quite some time now. The last really major bout of sideways activity in the U.S. market was the couple of months before the U.S. election. We're at risk of this type of deleveraging getting aggravated if volatility continues to expand here. And we've reached some key pivot points, as we've mentioned on the technicals at the top of the call. Finally, I should have done it at the top of the call, but apologies for the grainy and somewhat inferior quality of the graphics on the slide deck today. Still struggling with some PowerPoint issues. Can you believe that in this day and age? But very specific to Bloomberg's interaction with Microsoft Office and our network. I won't go into the details. It's not fun. That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.